Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Our musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this day, back in 1983, that singer Karen Carpenter died from what? Was it A, natural causes associated with aging? Was it B, an automobile accident due to wintry conditions in the Colorado mountains? Was it C, falling off the stage during a concert in St. Petersburg, Florida? Or was it D, heartbeat irregularities brought on by chemical imbalances associated with anorexia nervosa? Karen Carpenter, 1983. What was the cause of her death? And question number two, what is La Scala? Is it A, it refers to a period of time in music history between 1804 and 1906? Or is it B, it's the name of a famous opera house? Or is it C, it's a musical measurement which conductors use to lead their orchestras? Or is it D, it's where famous rock acts have performed in San Francisco since the 1960s? La Scala, what is that anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of February the 4th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1943, that Frank Sinatra made his debut as vocalist on radio's Your Hit Parade. Sinatra's Hit Parade debut, 1943, today. And it was 20 years ago today, 2002, that Stevie Wonder sang Happy Birthday to Rosa Parks on her 89th birthday at the premiere of the made-for-TV movie Ride to Freedom, The Rosa Parks Story. Rosa Parks' birthday greeting, 2002, today. And in classical music news, we have this article entitled, The Baton, a Conductor's Tool. And this is published on the 24th of March, 2021, by Gian Maria Griglio.it. History. The use of the baton as a symbol of power to command masses dates back quite a few centuries. First traces of it are found in 709 B.C. in Greece, where Phocrates of Patras used a golden staff to start some 800 performers. Curiously, given the male domination of the profession, the use of the baton is also documented in the convent of San Vito, used by nun Raffaele Aliotti, the first Italian nun to have published any music, to conduct a group of fellow nuns in 1594. In the words of Giovanni Maria Artusi, a noted composer of the time, the convent of San Vito was universally celebrated by many and diverse musicians from Italy and abroad. Roughly a century later, the big metal stick that was used to mark the tempo killed the owner. Lully, the Italian-born French composer at the court of Louis XIV, accidentally struck his own foot with it and eventually died from gangrene in 1687. Louis Sophor claimed to have introduced the modern baton to England on 10 April 1820 while conducting his Second Symphony with the Philharmonic Society in London. And when Mendelssohn returned to London in 1832, he was encouraged to use his baton. Music in the times of Wagner and Berlioz was getting too complicated for the old way of conducting, and the use of the stick with the consequent codification of basic conducting gestures became gradually accepted everywhere. In each case and throughout time, this conductor's device maintained its original purpose, to mark the tempo and keep together a group of musicians. The baton is an extension of the conductor's arm. When properly used, it helps the conductor gain clarity in showing and articulating the music and leading the players. It is to be noted that not all conductors use a baton, and some of the greatest conductors of all times either never used it or used it very rarely or conducted without it for a certain period of time, like Bernstein. Some conductors choose not to use it only for specific pieces of music. Whatever the reason, it's a choice that every conductor must make for themselves. And in music research and technology, we have this article entitled, Misophonia, When Sounds Really Do Make You Crazy. This is published on June 24, 2019, Harvard Health Blog, harvard.edu, James Caterine, Ph.D. What is misophonia? People with misophonia are affected emotionally by common sounds, usually those made by others, and usually ones that other people don't pay attention to. The annoying sounds create a fight-or-flight response that triggers anger and desire to escape. Misophonia is little studied, and we don't know how common it really is. It affects some worse than others and can lead to isolation, as people suffering from this condition try to avoid these trigger sounds. People who have misophonia often feel embarrassed and don't mention it to healthcare providers, and often healthcare providers haven't heard of it anyway. Nonetheless, misophonia is a real disorder and one that seriously compromises functioning, socializing, and ultimately mental health. Misophonia usually appears around age 12 and likely affects more people than we realize. Misophonia clinics exist throughout the U.S. and elsewhere, and treatments such as auditory distraction with white noise or headphones and cognitive behavioral therapy have shown some success in improving functioning. Some research shows links between misophonia and music. Certain songs, muffled music, and even singing specific notes can be triggers for some sufferers. Headphones might help diminish the irritable effect. And then there's this article, The Link Between Misophonia and Creativity. This is published in MMS.com on the 16th of December, 2017. A scientific misophonia study has yielded some positive results. A recent study by Northwestern University found that misophonia sufferers may be significantly more creatively talented than quote-unquote normal folk, thanks to something called leaky sensory gating. Well, which that suggests that talented creatives tend to lack the ability to filter out irrelevant sounds and or images. In other words, the creative achiever's sensory filters are leaky, and they're easily distracted by what's going on around them. It endows us with the propensity to process ideas outside of the conventional focus. Divergent thinking is associated with selective sensory gating. Divergent thinking is the thought process used to explore different possibilities and solutions. In other words, to generate a quantity of different creative ideas. The more I am exposed to triggers and annoying sounds, the more I concentrate on my work and escape from what is around. It is interesting seeing how certain minds are wired and why those who are afflicted by misophonia seem to be more adept when it comes to creative output. Quite a few musicians I know have the same condition. I have written about dementia and how those with the disease store musical memories in a different part of the brain, and whether music therapy can unlock other memories that might have been forgotten and ravaged because of Alzheimer's, dementia. Creative ability and music talent are as much to do with composites of the mind as are hard work and dedication. We know those with a predilection for arts like music have different brains to everyone else. I wonder, given the fact that the condition is an annoyance of noise, the need to create pleasant sounds is the brain's natural reaction. If certain people, like me, are sent into a spin at the slightest sense of an annoying sound, a counteraction would be something beautiful and soothing. I am different as I do not make music, but my urge to write and produce pieces is, in part, inspired by my misophonia. I have been a sufferer for years now, but I have found the problem exacerbated because of my working conditions. The only real bright spot has been that immersion into music and writing. There are treatments that can aid those afflicted by misophonia. If you're an anxious person, you want a music-based clinician who can administer the kind of music intervention that will ultimately strive to more permanently release anxiety. A music-based clinician can help you mediate fight-flight with music. Although there are many out there who are affected negatively by certain sounds, they have an unusually high creative aptitude and can translate that into incredible music. It is not reserved to musicians, of course. People in other areas of the arts possess a similar talent. Misophonia is not really a recognized condition among many. Doctors and professionals feel those affected are short-tempered and easy to annoy. Let us hope as more and more people come forward about conditions such as this, people out there start taking it much more seriously. The Ventures Walk, Don't Run introduces our rock music news. It's entitled Don Wilson, co-founder of the instrumental guitar group The Ventures, dies at age 88. January 23, 2022, by APNPR, Tacoma, Washington. Wilson died Saturday in Tacoma of natural causes, surrounded by his four children. The News Tribune reported, the band's hits include Walk, Don't Run and the theme song for Hawaii Five-O. They were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2008. Our dad was an amazing rhythm guitar player who touched people all over the world with his band, The Ventures, son Tim Wilson said in a statement. He will have his place in history forever and was much loved and appreciated. He will be missed. In the 1960s and early 70s, 38 of the band's albums charted in the United States. The Ventures had 14 singles in the Billboard Hot 100. With over 100 million records sold, the Ventures are the best-selling instrumental band of all time. The band scored the number two hit in the country with Walk Don't Run in 1960. Ventures founders Bob Bogle and Wilson were bricklayers when they bought guitars and chord books at a pawn shop in Tacoma in 1958. They were just really cheap guitars, Wilson once recalled. They didn't even stay in tune very well, but we wanted to learn. By the next year, they had formed the Ventures, adding Noki Edwards on bass guitar and Howie Johnson on drums. Skip Moore played drums on Walk Don't Run, and Mel Taylor took over on drums and rounded out the classic lineup with Edwards on lead guitar in 1962. The band continued to perform through numerous lineup changes, but Wilson was the one constant throughout. He didn't miss a tour until his retirement in 2015, according to the family statement. And in folk and local music news, we have this article entitled Green Pastures. Jake Xerxes Fussell revisits familiar emotional landscapes of love, loss, and labor on his standout fourth album. This is published in IndieWeek.com, January 19, 2022, by Nick McGregor. After a legitimate winter storm and the Omicron surge sucking the wind out of our almost post-pandemic sails, the Triangle could use some good news. Luckily, hope lies on the horizon. Hints of spring and contemplative optimism on Jake Xerxes Fussell's new album, Good and Green Again. Out this week on local label Paradise of Bachelors, Fussell's fourth LP packs diametric punches, equal parts earthy and ethereal, melancholic and hopeful. Its nine songs also deliver several career superlatives for the Durham-based folk song interpreter, guitarist, and singer. It's his most sonically adventurous record yet, contains his first songwriting credits for original compositions, and marks the first time a rug has served as a source material for an adaptive and rearranged tune. Washington rises and falls on Fussell's hypnotic fingerpick guitar, as parlor piano, French horn, and violin add stylistic flourishes to a single simple verse. General Washington, noblest of men, his house, his horse, his cherry tree, him. Fussell first spotted those words in the 1992 book Hooked Rugs, an American Folk Art, which included a picture of a circa 1890 rug produced by an anonymous Virginia craftswoman. The word stitched verbatim on the rug proved intriguing. That piece struck me as interesting, Fussell tells Indie Week, while being warm by the sun along the banks of his beloved Eno River one balmy December afternoon. There was something comical and plain, but also powerful and melancholy about it. That song is a purposeful counterpoint to the album's opener, Love Farewell. Fussell's warm baritone cracks and quavers on the haunting roundelay with Revolutionary War roots, yet his requiem sounds relevant, even modern, thanks to subtle sonic textures and undeniably emotional delivery. Good and Green for Again provides the perfect soundtrack for our strange pandemic plague times, and Fussell will be promoting it in person on national tour throughout February and European dates in May. It's an incredibly rare skill to play the blues in a major key or a jig in a minor key, the label's co-founder says, and Jake operates in these nebulous realms of vernacular music in a way that's remarkably unfussy and unstuffy, complex and challenging, yet unpretentious and accessible. In that sense, Fussell is representative of today's changing triangle, of this place where layers of complicated history intermingle and creative freedom blossoms in a wildly diverse artistic community that is undeniably himself. I love living in this area, he says. The music scene here is cooperative and collaborative, a real dream come true. There's no pressure to be a certain thing. You can be your own solo weirdo. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this day back in 1983 that singer Karen Carpenter died from what? Was it A, natural causes associated with aging? Was it B, an automobile accident due to wintry conditions in the Colorado mountains? Was it C, falling off the stage during a concert in St. Petersburg, Florida? Or was it D, heartbeat irregularities brought on by chemical imbalances associated with anorexia nervosa? Correct answer, answer D, anorexia nervosa. As noted in People magazine on 3/02/2020, iced tea was the hardest drink she consumed, and the only needles she used were for needlepoint. Her weirdest stash was a collection of Mickey Mouse memorabilia, the flagrant comet tale of self-indulgence so familiar in plummeting stars like Elvis Presley and John Belushi did not mark Karen Carpenter's life or her death of heart failure on February the 4th at age 32. Yet for all the soothing middle-of-the-road appeal she and her composer-arranger brother Richard, 37, bought to 41 Carpenter's records, which have sold 80 million copies and won 3 Grammy Awards, she had led a long, lonely struggle against another form of self-destruction, anorexia nervosa. Karen had spent almost all of 1982 in New York undergoing treatment and had lifted her weight from a gaunt 85 pounds to 108, very near normal for her frame and height at 5'4". But as anorexia expert Dr. Raymond Vath of Seattle points out, doctors learned only 2 months ago that the greatest strain is put on an anorexic's heart when lost weight is regained. She had perfect pitch, and with a distinctive 3-octave contralto vocal range, she was praised by her peers as one of the greatest singers ever. She was a magical person with a magical voice, says Burt Bacharach, who in 1963 had written the song which became the Carpenters' first hit, Close to You. Adds Paul Williams, author of their second gold smash, We've Only Just Begun, Karen and Richard's music brought the American family together during a period when there was very little else it could share. Williams's apparent reference to the turbulent Vietnam and Watergate eras was apt. And the answer to our second question, what is La Scala? The full name of this famous opera house is Teatro alla Scala, which translates as Theater at the Staircase, and is located in Milan, Italy. Correct answer, therefore, answer B. And it was on this very day, back in 1887, by the way, that Verdi's opera Otello premiered at La Scala. As noted in ClassicFM.com in an article titled La Scala, 15 Facts About the Great Milan Opera House, La Scala is the world-famous home of Italian opera where Verdi, Puccini, and other great composers first had their works performed. Most of the greatest singers of the past 200 years have appeared here. It was inaugurated on 3 August 1778. The theater was built on the site of the Church of Santa Maria della Scala, Holy Mary of the Staircase. Apparently, a sick child had once been cured because its mother put a statue of the Virgin on the landing. The stage of La Scala has not only provided a home to opera and ballet. The virtuoso violinist Paganini made his debut there in 1813. Conditions in La Scala Auditorium could be frustrating for the serious opera lover. In the audience, as author Mary Shelley of Frankenstein fame discovered in September of 1840, La Scala serves, she observed, not only as the universal drawing room for all of the society of Milan, but every sort of trading transaction, from horse dealing to stock jobbing, is carried on in the pit, so that brief and far between are the stretches of melody one can catch. One of the greatest names associated with La Scala is Arturo Toscanini. He played the cello there in the 1887 world premiere of Verdi's Otello, with the composer conducting. By 1898, Toscanini was himself principal conductor at La Scala, where he remained until 1908, returning as music director from 1921 to 1929. He took the orchestra to the USA on a concert tour in 1920 to 21. It was there that Toscanini made his first recordings. For more than 200 years, the greatest singers from all over the world have aspired to sing at La Scala. Maria Callas made her official debut at La Scala in a Verdi opera in December of 51, and the theater became her artistic home throughout the 1950s. The theater's Loggione, or Two Galleries, is considered a baptism of fire in the opera world, and fiascos are long remembered. But let's close out with one who received ecstatic receptions from La Scala's Loggione's critics. Dame Kire Tekenawa from New Zealand, singing Puccini's O Mio Bambino Caro. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.